Good afternoon and welcome. I call this meeting of the Committee of Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members, please mute your mics and we will get started. Having said that, this remote meeting hearing is conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. Also, this remote hearing can be viewed on House Television. I assume today it's going to be HTV4. Having said that, the committee legislative assistant will take the role for attendance. Jason, please.
Noor.
Present.
Jay Shong. Jay Shong. Hamilton. And Representative Hamilton was having trouble with his mic, so we might want to have to send him the actual number so he can call on his cell phone. Baker? Baker? Dabney? Dabney? Frankie?
Present.
Greenman?
Present.
Haley? Haley? Jurgens? Jurgens? Cagle?
Here.
Katiza Watun?
Present.
Olson?
Present.
Tujong?
Present.
Jaejong? Hamilton, Baker, Dabney, Haley, Jurgens.
Present.
We are at quorum.
Thank you, Jason Chavez. There's a quorum present. Members, I assume Representative Vice Chair Zhong has reviewed the minutes and will be making a motion to approve the minutes. I think he's having difficulty with his mic today. Welcome members. I'm sure you've reviewed the minutes. You
Mr.
have it
in Chair, the... I move the minutes.
Thank you so much, Representative Olson. Moves the minutes for January 11th. And just wanted to make sure that for those who are in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none. The minutes for January 11th has been adopted. Thank you so much, members, for all of you who are joining right now. I just wanted to say that we are fortunate enough today to have the Commissioner for Deed, Steve Grove, Commissioner for Department of Employment and Economic Development. We will be going through overview of the department. I know we have lots of questions, and we want to make sure that we get to your questions. So if it's a technical question, please raise your hand immediately. But if you can wait until the commissioner and his team are done with the presentation, that will be the best way that we can get done. And so we can learn about the department and some of the issues that we may have. You can always connect with the department. So having said that, I just wanted to welcome Commissioner Grove to Workforce and Business Development Committee. Welcome, Commissioner, and you may start the presentation.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Grove. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and thrilled to get the chance to talk with you today about the work of DEED and the work we have ahead of us together. I am joined today by the Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development and Research, Kevin McKinnon, our Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development, Hamza Warfa, our Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Services, Blake Chafee, and our Assistant Commissioner for Operations, Evan Rowe. You hear all from all of them in a little bit. But before, again, I just wanted to begin with a note of gratitude to all of you for your hard work over this last year. It has been an extraordinary year, and we've been in touch with so many of you on a very regular basis. Representative Knorr and I are on speed dial at this point. So many of you others have visited your districts, been able to get in touch with you and your constituents. Your leadership and your hard work over this last year have been essential to keeping our economy going at an incredibly difficult time. And whether that's been surfacing individual concerns on unemployment insurance from a constituent or helping a small business navigate aid programs at the state or federal level, time and again, all of you have shown up and helped our state manage this crisis in a way that really is just a testament to your leadership. So we feel very fortunate as a department to be working with all of you. I will say when the committee assignments came out and we saw the legislators in this committee, we were thrilled. This is really a group of thoughtful leaders, and we're excited for the work ahead. You know, I want to say that obviously we're at a time over the last year where there's been a lot of talk of division. And certainly in the last week, a really heightened amount of rhetoric around division. But this committee and our relationship and Minnesota's way of doing things does not have division at its center. It really has collaboration at its center. And when you look at, for example, the $216 million aid package that we collaborated on just last December, you know, Republicans and Democrats, House, Senate, the governor's office, obviously Deed and Revenue, that was just one great example of the fact that when it comes to growing our state's economy, you know, there's no left and right. There's just how do we create the best levers possible to grow this state's economy, because it is a great state economy, and it needs government to be a solid partner in that effort. So we come into this session just with an attitude of gratitude and also of collaboration. I want to thank you all for pushing this department to be better too. You know, I think the criticisms and concerns and issues that you raise to us, they make our department better, they make me better as a commissioner. And so we welcome that and we really appreciate it. And we are excited for more of that to come and for just a great legislative session. So, you know, really the purpose of today is just to ground us all in what is the work of Deed? What is it that your Department of Employment and Economic Development actually does? Many of you have been around for some time, so you have a good sense of this. Others are newer, so this will maybe be a lot more new information. But I'll say that even just in the last year or so, we have changed a decent amount of our approach to really try to deliver at a better level for Minnesotans. So as we begin to go through the slides here, we'll walk through some of the details of the what, but as much as we want to talk about the what, we'll also talk about the how. So I can't see the slide deck up right now, but is it present to all of you? Can you see the slides on your screen? Why don't we project it? I think Daryl Dannon, our legislative director, is going to do that. Daryl, do you have those?
Okay, I thought I was sharing. So
it was, and then it
sure. Commissioner, this is Travis. We turned the slides off because that was the only thing that House TV gotcha. Was able to see. So if Daryl wants to go ahead and share them again, it'll be front and center again.
All right, hold on then.
Thank all you, right. Travis.
This is what happens when I plan ahead, Travis. I'm teasing you. All right, hold on. We'll share it again. No worries. All right.
There we go.
There we go.
Good. Well, again, we're going to walk through just an overview of the department, and then we're going to go a little bit deeper into COVID-19 response, just since obviously that's something that is on everyone's minds. So I guess just to get us started, when this administration came into Deed a couple of years ago, we were really blessed to get to work with an amazing agency filled with extremely competent and passionate professionals. And we heard from them and from many of you and from stakeholders that Deed itself needed kind of a refresh in its approach and more focus on a kind of mission-driven agency and one that really put our customers at the center of everything that we do. And so one of the first things we did when we came in is just re-examine what our mission statement is. And our mission statement is really quite simple. It's to empower the growth of the Minnesota economy for everyone. And obviously it's the workers and businesses of our state that grow this incredible economy that we get to be a part of, but government plays a role in empowering that economy, and we have to do it for every last Minnesotan. So this is a mission statement that is simple, but it is a refreshed look at just why Deed exists as an agency. And then we also took some time working with members of our team and employees across Deed to do kind of a bottoms-up examination of of how we wanted to run the agency. What are the values that inhibit the kind of work that we want to do for businesses and people? And so we came together through a collaborative process on really six values that guide the work of this agency. They are focus on the customer, communicate early and often, seek solutions, be in that orientation of seeking solutions to problems, create inclusion across everything we do. We'll talk about that in a moment. Encourage new ideas, and to be gracious. These are, of course, just words on a paper, but I share them here because they really are part of how we do our work at Deed. Every month we hold a town hall and we lift up examples of individual employees or teams that have exhibited these values. We've instituted a new annual award system internally. No money involved, just recognition, but we award employees who have really living up to these values in truly unique ways, or teams that have really grabbed hold of these values and seen that live out in their work today. And so we wanna be living in a values-driven agency, one that, again, focuses on customers and does our work well, and these values are a big part of that strategy. If you go to the next slide, I think just to give you the most basic overview of what Deed does, we are your workforce development and economic development agency. Now, in many states, those two agencies are separate agencies. You have a sort of a workforce agency and an economic development agency. Deed actually encapsulates both. And we think that's a really great approach because it involves, puts both workers and businesses in the same proximity. And because in many ways, they're the same or different sides of the same coin in terms of employers searching for workers and workers searching for jobs, that kind of synergy is something that we think is the right arrangement for our state government. On the business side, obviously, we are working to attract and retain and expand businesses and create great jobs for all Minnesotans. And on our workforce, we want Minnesotans to find and prepare for jobs in great industries that have a long-term trajectory and to help people live independently without the need for government assistance, where a job is what sustains them and their families. And as you dig into Deed more deeply, you'll see it's a pretty diverse agency. And I say that in terms of just functionally, the agency looks at almost every experience that a worker could have, and it has a division that sort of covers that, whether it's unemployment insurance or state services for the blind or startup programs for new companies. It really captures a broad spectrum of issues that both workers and businesses face, and that diversity in our approach is really one of the strengths of the agency. So it's important. And then here are the divisions. Let me go through this just for a moment. These are kind of the broadest divisions that you can use to explain what Deed does. In a moment, I'll ask each of our deputy commissioners to walk through these in more detail. But we have workforce development, workforce services, economic development, and general support services. Previously, Deed had workforce development as one entire division, but that was really about 90% of the agency in one division. And workforce development, which is focused on building and growing those jobs for job seekers, had a distinct enough sort of contour to it. And workforce services, which helps in a lot of ways with some of the social safety nets or on-ramp programs to those who maybe need more help in being in a job-seeking orientation, made sense as kind of two separate divisions. And we'll walk through that in a little bit. But beyond just the what of what Deed does is the how we're running the agency. And so one of the things that we have done is really hone in on a system by which we can measure our progress over time. And one of those things is objectives and key results. This is a system that is used by companies across the world and increasingly more governments that sets really aspirational goals and then has key metrics that are used to measure success against those goals that we can track quarter over quarter. And that kind of combination of aspirational goals that stretch us and then a way to measure them through a metrics-driven approach is how we've begun to run our agency. So every quarter, we look at a whole host of objectives and key results across all of our programs. We track our progress through quantifiable results. Every single department at the agency sets goals that ladder up to the agency-wide goals, and then we grade them. The scale you can see here, we're not trying to get 1.0 on every grade. That would mean we set our goals too low. We're certainly not trying to get 0.0. That means we set our goals too high. Kind of the sweet spot is like 0.6 or 0.7 or so. It means we've stretched ourselves to achieve something better than we otherwise would. Again, rooted in the statutes that guide us, rooted in the programs and divisions that you've all built for us to run, but really focused on results. And I think this kind of performance-driven management is an important part of how we run the agency. If you go to the next slide, you'll see the objectives and key results we've set for this year. Again, trying to root the broadest themes possible for our agency and the problems of our moment and the challenges and opportunities that they give us. The first objective is to radically increase DEED's economic impact for individuals and businesses that face systematic barriers to growth. So every single team at DEED has an objective and a measurable result against that goal. The second goal is economic revitalization, which is to galvanize an economic recovery that advances Minnesota's labor market, businesses, and communities for the next Minnesota economy. This is really the rebirth of the reimagination of our economy in this coming year. Again, every program area has goals that stretch us towards that aspirational one. And then the third is really focused on culture, building a positive internal culture that makes DEED an extraordinary place to work. And we talked about culture a moment ago, but again, the whole point of even focusing on culture is that we want to have an agency that delivers for Minnesotans. And if people internally at DEED are operating effectively, efficiently, if there's a sense of camaraderie and belief in what we're doing, we're going to be better as an agency for the rest of the state. So these are, again, the three kind of broad goals that, as from an operational standpoint, really drive the work of our agency, and every single team ladders up into those in ways that that we think kind of gets everyone rowing in the same direction. As part of that work, we want to make sure that we're just running the most effective agency possible for Minnesotans and for businesses. So we've done a couple of things that I just wanted to highlight here. This isn't an exhaustive list, but it just gives you a sense of kind of the feeling in the air at DEED and how we're running the agency at this unique time. One is that we've created an innovation lab, an opportunity for people to bring new ideas or challenges they focus on, and using a human-centered design approach to get to solutions. So we've brought in experts from the University of Minnesota, from other state governments who've done innovation labs before, to really guide us on a journey of how to build that effort internally at our agency. And we just got this started sort of middle of last year. Already some great projects have come together around people who've come to the lab on improving services for our career force work, on improving some internal processes that we think are going to save taxpayer dollars. It's just a nice area to have where, you know, not everything in government you can innovate on because you've got to deliver and you can't experiment and fail in something that a life depends on. But there are a lot of areas inside of a government agency where you can innovate and where innovation is possible and, in fact, necessary. And our taxpayers and our constituents deserve it. We want to build that kind of culture, that kind of muscle internally that will make DEED a more effective agency. So that's been a good development, and we'll continue to update you on how that unfolds. Again, we're focused on a really performance-driven agency, not just in the objectives and OKRs for our programs, which I spoke about, but also just in the outcomes of the programs publicly and the transparent decision-making that exists around them. So, you know, what are the metrics for a workforce program that are fair and standard across all organizations? What are the key metrics for an economic development program that are critical to our success? That kind of culture of looking at the data to determine effectiveness and then making decisions based on that data is something that is central to what we're doing. We've reinvented our Office of Economic Opportunity. This is a critical office that serves as a bridge between DEED and communities all across the state. You hear more about this from Deputy Commissioner Hamza Warfa in a moment, but this was a huge area of growth for us. When you consider the hundreds of millions of dollars that DEED pumps into our economy every year, you got an awareness issue. You got an access to information problem. You want to make sure that every business, every person in the state knows what's available. It is not just those kind of on the inside know-how track that are coming for that money every time that it's available. And that takes us being proactive. And it's not enough just to post a link on a website and call it good or chuck a tweet out and figure you're done. You got to get out into community. And that is what that office has been set up to do. Many of you have helped us get that right. We are excited about it. And you'll hear more about that again a little bit later. And then I think just lastly, you know, we are significantly streamlining a lot of the processes in our agency to make it work faster, more transparent, and just be less bureaucratic. And we'll walk through some of the results of that in a moment. But we've taken a look at, for example, our grant making process to make that much more efficient and effective. And Deputy Commissioner Warfer will go into some of the details on that later. So these are some important parts of building an effective agency. I do want to back up just for a second because I think I missed the budget slide, which may be the most important one back on slide 6. Thanks, Darielle. We can go into more depth on this as needed, but I just want to highlight kind of how we're structured from a financial standpoint, because of course, budgets show you where your attention ends up being. And one thing just to note for everybody here is that DEED gets a lot of federal funding. In fact, more than half of our funding at DEED comes from the federal government. And really primarily that's in workforce, because the federal government has a strong interest in growing a strong workforce in our country. But it's just important to know in terms of how we're structured. These are all the divisions. I won't go into each, but I'll just highlight the top four divisions from a budgetary standpoint are employment and training programs, vocational rehabilitation services, business and community development, and our unemployment insurance program. And you'll hear more about each of those programs in a little bit. So before I turn it over for a deeper dive in each of our areas, I just want to take a moment to recognize the fact that we live in a really remarkable economy. And I'm sure every state's economic development director and, you know, wants to say that, but we can say that in this state with a great deal of confidence. We're fortunate. You know, we are the state and the country that if you start a business, you are more likely to be around 5 years from now than any other state in the country. This is the best state in the country for business survivability. People who start stuff here, they stick to it. Like, they believe in the business they've built and they make it happen. We are the first in Fortune 500 companies per capita among the top 30 metro areas of the Twin Cities, and fourth per capita in Minnesota. I'd heard a lot about the metro area of Fortune 500s when I came back from Silicon Valley a couple of years ago to my home state, but I didn't know as much about the fact that Greater Minnesota had such a great number of Fortune 500s, fourth per capita across the entire state. This is a huge blessing. We are the best state in the country for families. We're the least stressed state. We're always in the top rankings for happiness. I think we're number two or three this year behind Hawaii and Utah, but we'll get them someday, maybe if the weather gets a little better. But that's a huge value for us. We're the fourth best state in the country for education, fourth in labor force participation. Again, this is a hardworking state. People want to get to work. We're at over almost 68% labor force participation right now. That's been traditionally high. And we're the 10th most economically diverse state as it relates to kind of industry sectors, which is a huge strength, particularly in recessions, because when recessions hit, the more diverse economies can weather that hit based on the fact that they have a lot of different directions to go. So we do sit on top of an economy that's really fortunate, and we've got to do the best we can to make it a great economy moving forward. And so just a couple of thoughts quickly on economic recovery before we dive into the more details on DEED. We've begun to think about some of the principles that should guide our journey ahead for this recovery that we're going to have to engage in with all of you and the rest of Minnesota in the coming year. And these are some of the principles that I just want to put out there is that are on our mind. Obviously, you'll hear later from this month from the governor how our budget will hit on many of these points. But I want to just highlight some of the themes now. First is just to start with equity. We know this crisis has disproportionately impacted communities of color, not just in a public health perspective, but also from an unemployment perspective and a small business perspective. And so anything we do in this recovery has to start with equity as the primary principle. And I say this from a position of privilege, being a white man leading this agency. This is something that that my ears need to be continually open to, and I need to be continually in dialogue with community about, because it is the most important principle going forward. Second, I would say safely opening our state. We can certainly talk about that at length if it's useful here. But we want to keep opening of the state further and getting our economy back up and running and getting that consumer confidence up such that when it is open, people are out there engaging in our hospitality industry in particular as the virus gets to be in a better shape. Reskilling is a major focus because, look, you know, this recession has not been your typical recession. It is focused primarily on the service sector and hospitality. And so given that specific focus on an industry type, we need to be thinking about reskilling as that industry has had to reshape itself. And because a lot of the trend lines in our economy have accelerated around automation, digital technology, you know, jobs are looking very different on the other side of this thing than they did going in. We've got to have a focus on reskilling. Of course, job creation is at the center of any recovery plan. And I think looking at where those jobs are going to get created and making them long-term is important. And then our social safety net, I'll tell you, we'll talk about UI in a moment, but there's never been a better reminder of having a solid social safety net than we've seen this last year. And unemployment insurance has borne a great deal of that weight. We need to reinvest there and in other places to make our state stronger. So with that, I'm pleased to turn it over to the team that I get fortunate to work with at our department. Really thrilled now to turn it over to our Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development, Hamza Warfa, to walk through the work of the division that he oversees. So Hamza, over to you.
Great, thank you. Thanks, Commissioner. Chair Noor, members of the committee, thank you for inviting us to provide background about our work. As the commissioner was presenting, I personally was reminded of why I took this job and why I decided to come to DEED, which really to create change, to find new ways of serving more Minnesotans. And I think the impact of the pandemic over the last, you know, 8 months, 9 months, have really made this even more important. Before I go over the four subdivisions that come under the workforce development system, I just want to highlight, you know, that in the equity goal, OKR, it was important for us to name systemic barriers, because we really wanted to be clear about the root causes and systems that are in place, which have excluded a lot of communities from participating in our economy. Those are, you know, BIPOC communities, people with disabilities, women, others who couldn't really participate fully in our education, training, workforce, economic development, generational wealth building, and more. So most of our work really focuses on, especially under this division, our work is about removing barriers. And so I'm excited to share with you the four divisions here, what I would call signature programs under the workforce development system. Next slide, if you can, yep. So the first one I'd like to go over, as the commissioner mentioned, you know, employment and training program. It's a significant program we have. All of our training programs, whether within the state or the federal, we get about $300 million from the federal government. All are housed under the employment training program. And a number of programs, in the interest of time, I will not spend a lot of time on each of the programs, but just to highlight a few, we have employment services, a laid off workers, dislocated worker program. We're very fortunate to be the only state that also has a state dislocated worker in the entire country. So workers who lost their jobs through no fault of their own can receive assistance to find a new career. So the dislocated worker program is jointly, you know, administered with the support of the federal funding and the state one. In this session, you will see ideas to modernize the Workforce Development Fund, another, you know, the dislocated worker program that we will present in the future. We also have an adult training program. Some of you are very familiar with, you know, the P2P, Pathways to Prosperity program is the signature under this area. We also have youth and employment training programs, you know, and those eligible for these services are mostly low-income families, those who have severe barriers to employment, who are represented in our workforce system. And this is also jointly funded with some federal funding. Some of the key programs under the youth employment training are Youth Build, which, you know, creates, offers a construction career pathways for at-risk, you know, youth or opportunity youth. We also have Minnesota Youth Work Competitive Grant. Thank you for the investment from this biennial. This program serves, you know, disadvantaged youth, ages of 14 to 24, with a special consideration to youth from communities of color and those with disabilities. So it's a program that has really a significant impact on people that are looking for opportunities, you know, for career pathways and ways to build, you know, family-sustaining wage in the future. The other state-funded program I will quickly mention is the Minnesota Youth Program, which provides summer and year-round employment and training services to low-income young, you know, youth, 14 to 24. So that's really kind of some areas, but there's a number of other programs that come under employment training programs. In the next slide, you will see Career Force, which delivers, you know, joint services. It's kind of our workforce system. We work closely with our 16 workforce development areas. We work with our nonprofit providers. So it's kind of speaks to what the commissioner was speaking about, you know, the cross-sectoral approach to address the workforce challenge that we have in the state. So under Career Force, we have Veterans Employment Services, which gives priority services to qualified military veterans and assists them with connecting to employers and helping with the recruitment, you know, supply and demand. We also have Employment Services Unit, which oversees the administration of the federal Wagner-Peiser funding. and it delivers services to career seekers and employers. And over the last year and a half, we have really increased the number of employer engagements to ensure that, you know, the system serves both job seekers and employers. So careerforcemn.com is the website, and affiliated is minnesotaworks.net. So employers can access talent. We can all, job seekers can also seek counseling services, resume building, job search. And in this under pandemic period, we were able to pivot some of the services to provide virtual services. Those included, you know, online digital workforce training under Coursera platform. It included, you know, people who might have access to digital, you know, accessibility. They were able to, you know, use just really call, phone call. We provided linguistic services to ensure that, you know, people with different language, you know, have the accessibility in the midst of the pandemic crisis. And then we also have a job services team that does most of the counseling and, you know, some of the other key programs. We work closely with DHS under the MFIP program. We also work with other, you know, interagency collaborations happen with this team's efforts. So we also have CareerForce, what we call CareerForce Help Desk and Employer Services Team, especially dedicated to, you know, focusing on industries in demand, working with, you know, we know some of our regions have specialty areas. So this team also ensures, you know, that we work with employers, you know, they provide programs like the Work Opportunity Tax Credit, bonding and foreign labor certification programs, and host of other programs. And then the next slide, you will see the government, Governance Workforce Development Board. This is the board mandated to oversee the state plan that we submit to the federal government under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. So every 2 years, we are required to submit a plan in consultation with all of our stakeholders in the workforce space, led by our, you know, our system, the workforce development system. And so really labor, education, business, community-based organizations, government, county boards, they all participate. And so we're very, we were excited to get an approval for our two-year state plan last July. So that Governance Workforce Board meets about four times a year. We also have task forces under each of the committees to ensure that, you know, we are exploring ideas that the board can address from a holistic standpoint. And the fourth area is, Commissioner Grove mentioned, you know, the Office of Economic Opportunity. Some of you might recall this office was established in 2016 under a different name. And we have really revamped to ensure that, you know, what use are the programs if we don't have authentic outreach to the communities that would benefit from these services. So this office is about 70% external facing, where we connect with communities every week. We provide opportunities to get feedback about our services, and but also to promote our programs to those who can benefit from it. And then 30% of the remaining 30% of the office focus more internally, driving our equity agenda. So these are the four areas housed under the Workforce Development. We're grateful to your partnership and leadership and look forward to engaged collaboration in this session and beyond. So with that, I will turn over to my colleague, Economic Development, Kevin McKinnon.
Thank you, Hamza. For the record, Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development. We've obviously been quite busy over the last 9 months, which you'll hear about some of the programs later, but doing a lot, obviously, from not only programmatic perspective, but also communication with communities and businesses all across the state. Generally, as well, over the past 9 months, all of our programs have continued to see demand as well. So it's been an incredibly busy 9 months.
Deputy Commissioner, Ken, yes. I think your system is lagging. There's a little bit of, I don't know if it's on my side or your side too.
I think that's right. Maybe if we kill the video, it would help. I'm not sure.
I can try that. All right, is that better?
Much better, Deputy Commissioner Akin. Please proceed.
Excellent. Apologies for that. Slide, please, Darielle. The Economic Development and Research Division is really composed of four main areas. The Business and Community Development Division, which operates grants, loan, and tax credit programs, provides technical services to businesses and communities, basically to support the creation, expansion, attraction, and retention of businesses across the state. Our trade office plays an important role in our economic development efforts by providing export assistance and training for businesses to develop or increase their international customer base. And two other offices that I want to mention here, I won't be talking about them in the slides today, but just want to mention our Office of Broadband Development, mainly owned for its border-to-border grant program. Since 2014, we've had this office to coordinate public and private efforts to increase the availability, speed, and connectivity of broadband across the state. I think it's safe to say that over the last 9 months, we know the importance of that, much like this hearing today. Anyway, this program has increased access to economic health and education opportunities statewide, which is obviously important to economic development. And then the fourth division is our economic research area. This division is mainly funded by Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics to develop, refine, and publish data on our labor market and our economy. This is the group that you most likely are familiar with that presents monthly unemployment rates. But they do a lot of great work related to explaining economic impact and trends that serve not only businesses and communities, but also job seekers all across the state. So slide, please, Dario. So within the Business and Community Development Division, there are four units that I'll talk about here today. The first is our business development area. This group works with businesses and communities to access deed services and other resources to support the creation, retention, expansion, and attraction of businesses in Minnesota. The staff are on the ground. They are based in the regions with which they work and promote specific sectors where Minnesota has strength. And work with our communities to be prepared for economic development opportunities. Our workforce strategy consultants assist businesses in accessing deed workforce services and also promoting job opportunities. They too are based across the state and work collaboratively with local partners and businesses to help build a pipeline of talent, obviously important to economic development. And also within this group is our Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program, which pairs businesses with higher education institutions and provides grants to create and implement specific training programs for incumbent and new workers. Slide, please. Our business finance office, this is the group that provides grants, loans, and tax credits through over 20 active programs that we run. Some of the more well-known programs that you may be familiar with: the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, which is provides performance-based awards to new and expanding businesses after they meet job creation and capital investment targets. Our Minnesota Investment Fund, which provides upfront financing that targets job creation in industrial, manufacturing, and high-tech industries. Our Emerging Entrepreneur Program, which provides loans targeted at Minnesota small businesses owned by women, veterans, people with disabilities, and people from communities of color or low-income individuals. Our Angel Tax Credit Program, which provides a 25% tax credit to investors who invest in emerging and small technology businesses. And more recently, our Launch Minnesota Grants, which provide up to $35,000 for the most promising technology-based startups. Slide, please. Speaking of Launch Minnesota, this is a relatively new initiative that we started in the last biennium, essentially to catalyze our statewide technology entrepreneurial ecosystem. It's really rooted in providing the education and connections needed to advance a business today. And as such, we've employed various organizations across the state to create hubs and networks so that regardless of where you're located in the state, you have access to what you need to be successful. As a result, our education grants have helped create six hubs with more than 60 network partners all across the state. Much of these, the training and activities have been online, obviously, over the past year, but this initiative is really gaining momentum to energize communities all across the state. Almost 400 people have successfully completed our lean startup training, and we're in the process of creating more access to resources such as our mentors or experts to help individual businesses with their ideas. Slide, please. Sticking with our small business area, we run two small offices as well that provide information and assistance to entrepreneurs and small businesses. The Small Business Assistance Office is the office that provides guidebooks and information for starting and managing a business. In addition, this office offers individual transactional advice via phone or email. More than 35,000 people use this service every year. Deed is also the host agency for the SBA's SBDC program, our Small Business Development Center program. This is a statewide network that provide professional expertise and guidance that every small business owner needs to flourish in today's competitive and changing business world. We partner with 9 regional centers across the state, mainly at higher education institutions, to offer free consulting to startups, emerging and growing small businesses. This is also the unit that provides a variety of competitive grant programs for our nonprofits to serve targeted populations with business development technical assistance, to increase our quality and quantity of childcare, and as I mentioned earlier, our Launch Minnesota grants that help our communities be connected all across the state. Slide, please. The next area in the economic development group is our community finance group. We also know that to attract and keep businesses, jobs, and people, our communities need many things, that is sound housing, ample commercial and industrial property, water, solid infrastructure, and so on. To make these more affordable, we provide financial assistance to communities statewide for projects that help them stay vital and better position them for new economic growth. But some of our programs include infrastructure, mainly from bonding bills. We provide financing for infrastructure projects to support business growth, such as water sewer lines and roads, transportation projects. These funds assist the communities with the cost of this infrastructure. Our Brownfields and Redevelopment Office provides funding for communities working with developers to clean up land and buildings and return them to productive use, thereby generating job opportunities and tax increases for those communities. Our Small Cities Group is a federal program from Housing and Development. It's a $16 million program basically to provide grants to non-entitlement areas across the state. These are the small cities that do not receive a direct appropriation directly from HUD. This program works to rehabilitate commercial buildings and housing in communities for low-income individuals. This group also does a lot of the special appropriations, local projects, as you might know, from bonding bills. I think about 50 last year that this group manages, along with the Destination Medical Center project in Rochester and the Regional Medical Exchange in Duluth. Slide, please. The last group is our trade office, and trade has been and remains a critical part of our economic development strategy at DEED, promoting stability and growth through exports and working to attract international investment to Minnesota. The reason is simple. Sales outside our borders are good for the economy. The MTO provides a broad range of programs and services, sponsors and coordinates trade missions and other outreach to foreign countries to showcase Minnesota and our businesses, and organizes reverse trade missions to bring people from foreign countries to Minnesota to learn about opportunities that exist. Importantly, we provide counseling and assistance in accessing markets for our businesses. And we also provide some financial programs to help make those connections as well. Staff conduct group training sessions and also provide one-on-one counseling and serve hundreds of small and medium-sized businesses each year. This office also works with partners across the globe to open doors for Minnesota businesses and to identify investors who might consider a Minnesota location. So I know that was a quick overview of the economic development area. But as Deputy Commissioner Warfa mentioned, happy to work with you and answer questions and talk about the Economic Development and Research Division at DEED. I'd now turn it over to my part, Deputy Commissioner Blake Chafee for Workforce Services.
Good afternoon. Chair and members. My name is Blake Chafee, Deputy Commissioner of the Workforce Services Division here at DEED. So our team is comprised of four teams: unemployment insurance, vocational rehabilitation services, state services for the blind, and disability determination services. So on the whole, these programs provide financial assistance to Minnesotans that have lost their job or cannot work, and provide training, placement, support, ongoing supports to Minnesotans with disabilities. Incredibly important work for the economic success of the state and for us at the department. The first of those teams, as you'll on the PowerPoint, Voc Rehab Services. They provide assessment, evaluation, counseling, training, a number of different services for Minnesotans with disabilities. So the first bullet there is Voc Rehab, which we would call the basic VR program. So geared towards helping people with disabilities to explore employment choices, find and maintain a job, a career, and advance their careers through counseling, education, and continued training. We also provide pre-employment transition services. So this is aimed at students, at youth, with disabilities to help plan out their school, their post-secondary and career opportunities. One thing I think is important to share with the committee and to share this afternoon, I think some folks maybe more familiar with VR know this. The program provides services to Minnesotans with disabilities in four distinct categories. Category one being reserved for customers with the most significant and complex disabilities. Under federal law, if the program does not have the resources to provide services to all applicants, we have to establish a priority of service. As some folks are aware of those four categories, three of the four have actually been closed since 2014. Really happy to share with the committee today that as of December, just the end of last year, the program was able to open up service in categories two and three and clear our waiting list. So because of that, we expect to serve an additional 2,000 up to 2,400 Minnesotans with disabilities before the end of the fiscal year. So that's good news. I think we're excited by that and looking forward to the ability to expand service to Minnesotans that need support and need help. Next on the list, extended employment helps people with disabilities keep their jobs, advance career through long-term supports. We do that through a network of 28 community providers. We also work with Centers for Independent Living. So we provide both state and federal funding to the centers who help Minnesotans with disabilities really live, function independently in the home, at work, and on the job in their community. Individual placement and supports. IPS assists people with mental illness to achieve steady employment outcomes in an integrated setting. The program provides a wide range of employment services and supports. Last on the list, deaf, blind, hard of hearing. These are grants to community partners that provide long-term employment support for persons who are deaf, deaf, blind, or hard of hearing. A couple of the, just by the numbers for the program, fiscal year 20, about 5,700 enrollments. We have 15,000 ongoing program participants, and we exited just about 2,300 into employment plans or with a job. Extended employment, about 3,100 customers served, which amounts to just about $28 million in the Minnesota economy. The next program in workforce services is state services for the blind. We assist Minnesotans who are blind, deafblind, losing vision, or that have a disability that makes it difficult for them to read print. There are a couple main components to SSB, three, workforce development, senior services, and then our communication center. That workforce development team is actually broken up into two parts. We have a voc rehab program that works with individuals, with students on skills, training, and technology needs, helping them to be part of the workforce. We have employment specialists and assistive technologists that actually work with businesses to assist them in recruitment, employee retention, to work with employers on accommodations. So some really important work. Second part of workforce development is our business enterprise program. So we provide vending businesses, business opportunities, for blind, visually impaired, and deafblind entrepreneurs. So these vending businesses, which I'm sure many of you in the committee have seen, are within state and federal buildings. We have 158 locations actually throughout the state, across the state. Right now we have 28 entrepreneurs, and their programs generate, or their vending businesses, generate about $5.7 million in annual sales. So a really, really important program for our entrepreneurs. Our senior services team really works with customers to help them meet the challenge of vision loss with support and service that's really tailored to their needs. So these services, kind of on a broad range, anything from maybe managing household activities, things like training to use a white cane, how to continue to access technology, up to more complex interdependent skills. A lot of the folks that we work with do have an age-related macular degeneration, glaucoma, other vision-related conditions that are often a part of aging. The final program within SSB, our communication center. The communication center provides information, just about anything you can think of, newspapers, books, magazines, an array of materials through Braille, audiobooks, some podcasts, large print. We also provide Braille materials for Minnesota's K through 12 school kids, and we do the same for higher education students. Our reading service, the Radio Talking Book, broadcasts books, news, magazines, daily newspapers. Radio Talking Book is really a gem. Started in 1969, first of its kind service in the United States, North America, across the world. Something that is an important part of the work that we do in providing accessible information, and something that we're just really proud of. So please check that out if you get a chance. Move on to something that I think all of us have heard a lot about in the last year, in the last 10 months, is unemployment insurance. We have been invited back to take a deep dive next week, so I'm going to do kind of just a high-level overview. Basically, unemployment insurance is a program that provides temporary partial wage replacement to workers who have become unemployed through no fault of their own. It's an eligibility-based program, generally pays up to 50% of the average weekly wage for 26 weeks. That's subject to a weekly maximum, which in Minnesota is about $740. We work very closely with our colleagues in CareerForce, with Deputy Commissioner Warfa's team, to ensure that workers that have been separated from their job have a successful path back into the workforce. So that's really an important relationship inside of Deed on behalf of our customers. The last thing I would say is Minnesota regularly ranks in the top five states as it relates to running this program in all federal performance standards. I think we're really lucky in Minnesota to have one of the best, if not the best, UI programs in the country. We'll certainly talk more about this later, but it has been a trying and busy year for the team. I'm incredibly proud of the work that they've done on behalf of Minnesotans, helping them weather the pandemic. We've paid out just about $9.6 billion since March, compared to about $800 million last year. So just gives you a little bit of the idea of the volume that we've worked with. Kind of last, and there's not a slide for it, is Disability Determination Services. Our Workforce Services team also includes DDS. It's a federal program. It is funded 100% by the Social Security Administration. As the name would suggest, the DDS team adjudicates applications for Social Security disability on behalf of SSA. Generally, we receive process about 45 to 50,000 determinations a year. So like I said, federally funded SSA kind of provides directs a lot of what they do day to day in terms of the incoming caseload, but also an important part of the Deed team and ultimately the suite of services and the things that we provide for Minnesotans. So appreciate the chance to share a little bit with you about a Workforce Services team, and I'm happy to pass it to my colleague Evan Rowe.
Thanks, Blake. Mr. Chair, committee members, it's nice to see you all. My name is Evan Rowe. I am the Assistant Commissioner for Operations at Deed, and I'm really excited to be here today. I just have one slide to show you all, and that's just a quick overview of the General Support Services area here at Deed. We're the team that helps Deed run and make sure that we're providing really great services to both our internal and external customers across the agency and across the state. Just really quick, General Support Services comprises the Commissioner's Office, the Communications Office, which has both an external-facing communications component as well as an internal-facing communications element. Our Office of Diversity and Equal Opportunity, which ensures that we are not just complying, but excelling in regards to our obligations around equal opportunity and our diversity goals as a state government. Our Office of General Counsel for all legal needs. Our Administrative and Financial Services Group, which does everything from procurement to finance to real estate management and other related services, human resources, our Performance and Technical Management Team, which helps manage our group, our relationship with Minute, as well as a variety of other services and systems and performance management for a variety of our programs. And we also are the liaisons with our peers and counterparts at Minute to ensure that all the various technologies, which, again, our internal and external customers use, are running smoothly and well. With that, I'll turn it back over to Commissioner Grove. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Mr. Commissioner. And we've been sharing a lot here, so we want to get to questions as soon as possible. We did just want to take a moment to talk about our response to COVID-19, as obviously that is a topic on everyone's mind. And we'll just run through a few of the programs that we have built and collaborated with on all of you, and then eager, Mr. Chair, to get to questions from the committee. So, I think we talked about UI a moment ago, but it's just helpful to give a perspective here. Over $9.5 billion into the pockets of Minnesotans since this all began through our state's UI system. That's 23 million actual payments. We used to send checks out in the mail. We don't do that anymore. We just go straight to bank accounts. But when we did, they were 7 inches or so long. And if you add all the checks up that we have mailed, as it were, this year, it'd be about 3,000 miles worth of payments. It's just a lot of money and a lot of people. 815,000 individuals have received at least one payment this year. And obviously, the vast majority of these people never expected in a million years that when 2020 began, they'd be receiving unemployment insurance. So it has been a gargantuan effort to help folks across the state receive payments. And it's one that we will continue into this year. Right now, we're experiencing about 380,000 weekly benefit requests for unemployment insurance from Minnesota workers. And it's our top goal to make sure people get paid fast, efficiently, and fairly. And that we're transparent and open about communication. And you've all helped us do that throughout this last year. Diving into some of the, this is just a quick graph that kind of makes the point that I just did, that to put it in perspective, this is a jump that we have not seen since the likes of really any recession in history. We're back now down to levels that we were at sort of at the peak of previous recessions. But that initial jump in April was an extraordinary lift. And I just want to give a shout out to our unemployment insurance team for the work that they did to make this possible. We are blessed in this state to have one of the strongest unemployment insurance systems in the country. So we've also, of course, been helping small businesses through the leadership you've all provided on building some great programs, an emergency loan program that brought about $30 million of money from the state budget into small businesses across the state. These are 50% forgivable loans. We also did a loan guarantee program that helped to get banks involved more frequently by guaranteeing about 80% of the principal that would come from those loans backed up by the government, max of $200,000 loans there. And then we did a CARES Act focused grant round of about $72.5 million that we worked on extensively in a special session earlier in the summer that brought CARES Act funding to a whole host of businesses across the state with specific carve outs for businesses that have faced some of the steepest challenges, whether they be smaller businesses, businesses owned by people of color, or cultural malls. This is a critical step in helping small businesses weather some of the toughest months of this pandemic. And really a debt of gratitude to Representative Noor and Stevenson and Mahoney, who are key contributors to that legislation. And then, of course, as I mentioned at the top of this conversation, the relief package from last December, $216 million. This is really an unprecedented aid package for state businesses, broken into three chunks, revenue for our restaurants, bowling alleys, and bars and breweries and wineries through a Department of Revenue program is around $88 million of that bill. A movie theater and convention center grant program that DEED is running to help movie theaters and convention centers weather this pandemic. And then a lot of money for counties, which are giving a lot of flexibility really to counties to make some of those decisions. We'll get a little bit more deeply into the movie theater and convention center grant program just because those are the ones that DEED runs. For the movie theater program, this is focused on obviously our state's movie theaters focused by screen numbers of screens. You have to have had at least $15,000 in ticket sales in the last year and a 30% drop in revenue this year compared to last. And you have to have a physical location here in Minnesota. And any money that we give to those theaters has to be spent on theaters here in Minnesota. So for those national chains, this isn't money to send to LA or New York. It's money to be spent right here in Minnesota. And then the convention center grant program is the next one. This is just focused on these large regional convention centers that are really economic drivers for their region, right? Folks come to convention, they spend a lot of money at the businesses around those centers. And they've of course had a huge amount of suffering this year, given the fact that large gatherings are about the last thing that you can do in the middle of a global pandemic. And so we are focused on really the largest regional convention centers here. These are convention centers that seat at least 1,500 or more. And the money here can be up to $500,000 total in grants. And again, some of those same restrictions apply in terms of the amount of revenue drop and economic impact there. So those programs are both open. They'll be open through January 29th and happy to answer further questions on either of those. And then lastly, the county relief grants. These are, of course, administered by the counties themselves. This is the largest bucket of money from that program. And these go directly to counties to really have as much flexibility as they need to distribute money to businesses who need it. Those businesses can be businesses who've also gotten money from the revenue bucket of the program. They can be businesses that are directly or even indirectly affected by executive orders and the challenges that we've faced. And so really wanted to work closely with the Association of Minnesota Counties and Minnesota's 87 counties to really get that program right. And so that aid package is something that we're very much focused on as a huge priority as this year begins. And again, just a big thanks to Representative Noor and Representative Baker in particular, who are really chief negotiators with us in that process earlier this year. So I will stop there. We're eager to hear your questions. Thanks for the chance to come talk to you. We're looking forward to a good session ahead. And Mr. Chair, appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you, Commissioner Grove. I appreciate the work that your department and also your staff and everybody has been doing. This has been a challenging process. It's as if we haven't had even a break from the previous session. So this is just a continuity of the work that we're doing. Members, I will encourage you to ask questions by raising your hand using the raise hand function, and you'll be recognized based on who is asking. So, and then I just wanted to plug in that Hennepin County, the county resources that the commissioner just mentioned, the application due date is tomorrow. So if you live in Hennepin County, every county is unique. They know their constituents, they know what the needs are. So what I'd like to encourage is for individuals to go to their county and apply for those programs. And Hennepin County, the deadline for the application for the COVID relief is tomorrow. Having said that, I know I have many questions. I'd like to let my colleagues ask those questions first. Our lead, Republican lead, Representative Hamilton, has got his hand up. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner, thank you for the conversation we had earlier. Greatly appreciated. Mr. Chairman, I have three topics or three questions. The first one, Commissioner, I have a passion for people with disabilities. And through this struggle with COVID, our development achievement centers, DACs, and communities in which I represent have really been impacted in a negative way. And subsequently, people with disabilities have found themselves unemployed. Could you just once again briefly touch on how we're going to address that and get those people back to work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, it's a great question, and it's something that's very important to us as well. You know, sitting back for a minute and just looking at the trend lines here, which I'm sure you know well, we have seen in the last 5 years a huge increase in the labor force participation of people with disabilities, and I think an increased willingness of employers to hire people with disabilities because they bring skills that folks without disabilities don't have. Strong loyalties, real commitment to focus, abilities to problem solve and think outside the box, because that's what somebody with disabilities has to do every single day of their lives. So we have really lifted up that part of this agency's work a lot over the last year and a half and have held several forums and roundtables on it. I'll say specifically as it relates to our VRS department, and Deputy Commissioner Chafee can chime in here if he has more to add too. This is an area where in-person service matters more than virtual service, and it's been one of the challenges of this pandemic, right? This virtual stuff works for most people. It may not be ideal, but it works. There are a whole host of Minnesotans who have disabilities for whom this doesn't really work. And we consistently reevaluate, you know, can we get into more in-person services? Can we bring people, you know, into our career force centers in a way where everyone is safe? I can just tell you candidly, we were very close to doing that before the surge in the fall. And now that things have calmed down a bit, that's a conversation we are re-engaging in very directly because, you know, look, I come from technology. I live and breathe using these tools, but I am no fool to the fact that this doesn't work in a lot of situations. And so I think in-person service really matter. I do think getting more categories of our people with disabilities into the VRS program by getting them off the wait list has been a huge efficiency win for that department. But we look forward to work with you on this because I think there's ways that we can improve it even further. And you as a lifelong advocate for this and someone who's been a real leader here, I think can help us a lot. So I appreciate you raising this.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, the second question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two more questions. My second question, it was brought up about infrastructure, the need for infrastructure for businesses. And I represent a very rural area. And this is one of the reasons why I ran. We have a highway that runs right through the heart of District 22B, Highway 60. That highway was scheduled to be completed in 1973, and all the money dried up and came to the metro area. And so that was a big motivation for me to run for office. In 2008, I voted to override Governor Plunkett's veto. We were able to secure $223 million, and finally we got that road completed. The same thing is water, the land of 10,000 lakes. In our area, we have a shortage of water. We worked directly with Governor Dayton, secured $70 million to get rural water infrastructure down there in southwestern Minnesota. And so we need to make sure with DEED that we're working with the other departments and entities to make sure that rural Minnesota isn't left behind. We're addressing roads and water and sewer and some of those things. So I don't know, Commissioner, if you want to comment on that.
Well, I think it's really well said, and I think it is in many ways particularly important in greater Minnesota, and the legislature consistently, you know, brings quotas and carve-outs for greater Minnesota percentages in terms of the program spend to our agency, which we're eager to enact. You know, one area that I didn't mention in the overview of the agency is that we also oversee the quasi-independent Public Facilities Authority that puts out millions of dollars every year into water and infrastructure projects. So we work very closely with Director Freeman and his team, which is a critical piece of this. And we also have some programs with MnDOT on transportation projects that lead to economic development. So we were glad to see in the bonding bill that came through some more money for the business development bonding programs that we have at DEED, BDPI, and others. Many of those are just specifically for greater Minnesota. But you're right. I mean, this is about economic development. It's also about jobs. You know, this is a moment when good jobs can come from these bonding projects. And so we'd love to continue that conversation this session.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, my last question is that businesses can handle a lot, but what they can't handle or really struggling is with the uncertainty. And Commissioner, if you can take the message back to the governor, is we need to make sure that we have more certainty or additional timelines or time to plan in the event that there are these shutdowns, et cetera. And so Commissioner, I don't know if you have a crystal ball or anything like that. If you can give us any type of idea where we're gonna go from here as far as getting businesses reopened and getting people back to work.
Commissioner Grove.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, it's a great question. And many of you may have caught the governor last night with Doug Loon at the Minnesota Chamber event, in which he was clear in saying the last thing he wants to do is dial back any further. And the thing he most wants to do is dial forward more. It has been the most vexing and difficult challenge for businesses this year is that uncertainty and the back and forth and the challenges and that lead time. And so message received. I think I'm glad you're raising it here. Businesses raise it to us all the time. This pandemic has been anything if not unpredictable, but we have to do the best thing we can to give businesses as much assurance as we can. They're already dealing with unpredictable levels of consumer confidence. Anything government can do to be more consistent and give more lead time is important. So we'll strive for that, and we ask that you keep pushing us to strive for it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much, Representative Hamilton, for the questions. I know we have to look into how to address the pandemic at the same time taking care of individuals for their lives and livelihood. So those are great questions. The next person is Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, this kind of goes back to some of the COVID recovery stuff that we just covered. And I have a unique situation with the National Sports Center in my district. And so was curious, I know I had encouraged them to kind of seek some of the assistance under the convention center piece. And so was just wondering if that was the appropriate place for them to seek assistance and if they were able to access some of that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cagle, it's a great question. And I can turn over to Deputy Commissioner McKinnon if we want to get into some of the details of that program. But, you know, it was very much, as the legislature wrote it, about these kind of neutral meeting spaces for which any type of meeting can take place versus stadiums or concerts or theater halls or centers that are sort of part of other mixed businesses like malls and things like that. So, you know, I think that it's more likely than not that the National Sports Center, which is truly one of the treasures of our state, is better focused on the county bucket because of its unique stature. I think the convention center program is really narrow. Our estimate is there's around 10 or so in the state that qualify for that convention center program. And the reason to carve them out is just that if there's enough things that look alike, then the state can move quickly to get money out in a way that might be faster than counties. But I'm glad you raise it, and I hope that they apply for the county program.
Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, did you have anything to add to that?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions, Representative Cagle? So the next person is Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess mine aren't more so questions. I don't know, Commissioner Grove, if you know or not, that I do own a small bar and a small cafe. So I just wanted to echo Representative Hamilton's, you know, sentiment about the uncertainty. I won't go into that. It's been tough on all of us. But I would like to pay your agency a little bit of a that-a-boy. During this pandemic, my industry has been up and down. We've been shut. We've been closed. My employees have been out of work, working part-time, working full-time. The unemployment insurance program has become, you know, second nature to me in assisting my employees. And I will say that the transition from the overwhelming influx that you guys had and then moving till now has just been awesome. The response, the ability for your people to communicate with my people and to get their questions answered and their needs met has just been wonderful. Now that's been my own personal experience, but I thought today's day and age, you deserved a pat on the back and your people deserve a pat on the back for the hard work they've been doing around that to help the people of Minnesota. And that's all that I have, Mr. Chair.
I couldn't agree with you more, Representative Frankie. Thank you so much for that comment. I don't know if you wanted to respond back, Commissioner Grove.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie, thanks. All credit goes to the team. And we know your employees have had a heck of a year, and it's so stressful. Every single claim matters. So we appreciate your leadership, too, and just elevating their claims and the claims of your constituents, because this money is really keeping food on the table for so many families at a really difficult time.
Commissioner Grove, I just wanted to clarify some few things. I know you talked about the Department of Revenue direct payments. I'm assuming those payments are already going out as we speak. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct. The all qualifying businesses should have received a letter through the e-file system by December 31st. And I believe the Revenue Department sent out the payments just yesterday. And so it should take 5 to 7 business days for it to hit the account, but that is moving forward. I should say, and I'm sure Commissioner Doty can speak to this with a lot more specificity, but you know, there may be businesses who felt like we should have qualified and didn't, or we were under the wrong sort of NAICS code, in other words, classified as a type of business that we didn't think we were. There will be a chance to raise your hand and let Revenue know that. That'll be more information on that in the coming days. But yeah, that bucket, as we all discussed in building that package, was really about speed. And so just a huge kudos to Commissioner Doty and his team, who worked through every single day of the holiday season to get that program up and running. And thankfully, those checks are now moving.
Thank you, Commissioner. I see Representative Baker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Commissioner Grove, thanks for all your work on this. We worked a lot on a lot of issues here. And something just came to my attention today, and I know that Commissioner Doty from Revenue is not on the call with us today, but restaurants and bars now are at a real critical point where sales tax payments, when they closed on November 20th, are due, and they sort of kind of held back on that. Can you speak to what the Department of Revenue or maybe the governor may be able to do to kind of help delay or give some time for them, the restaurants, bars that are right now having to pay sales tax from monies right when they were shut down? Is there any kind of a window where we can allow them to not be penalized for the next 30 to 60 days right now? Have you had any conversations with your colleague, Commissioner Doty, on giving us some time? I just got some emails today that are due, and we got some folks out there that are just opened, you know, yesterday, and they don't have the money yet to pay that sales tax from November when they had to shut down. Any comments on those sort of deadlines right now that are facing these operators?
Representative Baker, I understand Commissioner Grove is representing the Department of Deed. I don't know if he can respond to a question that is being directed. Go ahead, Commissioner Grove.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, you're right. Commissioner Doty could certainly go into more detail here, but obviously he and I are talking every day, and this issue has come up again and again, Representative Baker, so I'm glad you raised it here. Individual organizations who need deferral of those payments should just call Revenue ASAP. The ability to defer those payments still does exist. It's not being proactively deferred. You got to raise your hand for it. But I would instruct any business who who needs that deferral given these shutdowns to go contact revenue directly. I think they have a whole page in their website, as I recall, that walks through this. So again, more detail from Robert and his great team, but it is important, and I'm glad you raised it here for awareness.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. Just as you represent and speak for businesses, I wanted to make sure you had that pipeline and that relationship. So I will tell them to reach out to Commissioner Doherty. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. I see Representative Dovney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question, I believe, is for Assistant Commissioner Warfa. A lot of the conversation this afternoon here has focused on business supports, and that's as it should be. We've done a lot of work around that, bipartisanly led by Chair Noor. But Assistant Commissioner Warfa, an unemployment question. I'm hearing, and I know a number of my colleagues are hearing as well, from restaurant workers who are long-term unemployed, who mid-March of 2020, they lost their jobs when the restaurant closed and have not been able to secure employment at that restaurant or at any other restaurant since, and are telling us that they lost a week of benefits the week of December 20th. And they're not understanding how between the extension that we passed and was signed into law by the governor and the extension that President Trump signed, admittedly late, but those two extensions they thought would cover them. And I'm wondering if you can explain to members, are they not getting that coverage? Because obviously these are folks who may not have made a whole lot of money to begin with, and unemployment, we seem to like to keep our unemployed people poor, and the unemployment benefits in Minnesota don't provide an excessive benefit level. And so missing a week is serious business for folks. Can you help me better understand the situation, please, sir?
Yeah, Chair Noor, Representative Devin, my colleague Blake Shafi oversees unemployment, so he will respond to the specific question. But I'd like to take advantage of this now to say that, you know, we know the service industry is an industry that has been significantly impacted by COVID. And we know some of the jobs might never come back. I think most of them will come back, but as it is on every state, a lot of jobs, you know, some displaced workers might need to think about, you know, upskilling or reskilling, utilizing their existing skills for another job or another sector. So we are leading a reskilling initiative in which we are working with, you know, displaced workers by providing multiple avenues to either get immediate training or immediate job that requires, you know, less new training and more of using existing skill sets. And so we recognize this is going to require a multi-pronged approach to really help, you know, displaced workers. But to your specific question, I'd like to invite my colleague, Deputy Commissioner Blake.
Deputy Commissioner Shafi.
Chair, Representative Dabney, that's an excellent question. And to put a fine point on it, there were a universe of folks that did miss a week or two potentially of payment between the CARES Act and the stimulus bill. When the stimulus was signed by the president, it became effective for the week of 12/27 for December 27th. And then folks were able to request that payment starting Sunday, the 3rd of January. Depending on when an individual applicant started on benefits, so going way back to March, right, 26 weeks of a standard benefit, 13 of an extension. Some folks were on extended benefits, but there was a group of applicants that did exhaust before that week of the 27th. And some of them missed potentially 1 or 2 weeks. There was no ability within the stimulus to go back retroactive farther than the 27th. That's a universe that, and I apologize, there was a time when I could have told you exactly how many folks it was. I just don't have that in front of me right now. That is a universe of applicants that we did identify, and we communicated with them directly, especially when you consider you know, we were able to thankfully move very quickly to stand up the programs within the new stimulus. So we did reach out to those folks, and despite the fact that, you know, some of them missed one, potentially 2 weeks, they did become eligible again under the stimulus. So we were able to reach out to them directly and say, hey, go back into your, you know, go back into your account. There are benefits available now. But that is, Representative, that is correct. There were some folks that that did miss potentially a week or two of benefits in the interim between exhausting benefits under the CARES Act and the stimulus starting that week, the 27th.
Chair Dubney?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Mr. Chaffee, thank you for that. And I, any critique you may have picked up was not a, in my voice or comments, was not a critique of the agency or of your work, but concern for my constituents who are in a difficult position and found themselves in a gap, and then a larger question about decades of decisions around unemployment and how robust, how sustaining unemployment benefits should be or not. So thank you for the information. I'll try to carry that back to my constituents.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Dubney. The next person is Representative Juggins. Tony Juggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Grove, first of all, I want to thank you for your accessibility throughout this whole pandemic. I'm sure when you took this job, growing jobs in Minnesota is what you were looking forward to, not dealing with a pandemic. But throughout this, you personally have been accessible to me and to my constituents, and so have your staff, whether it's unemployment issues or questions, and I appreciate that. So I just want to say thank you. With respect to the Department of Revenue payments that are going out, you know, a lot of us reached out to our counties and urged them when they got to their bucket to distribute the money to the businesses in our counties to take into consideration those that might not have qualified during the first bucket because of the criteria of second and third quarter reduction in business or loss of 30% or more. But unfortunately, they don't know who those businesses are because that data is not being made available. Can you help me understand a little bit about the criteria for not making, and we don't need to see people's tax returns, but a list of businesses in my district would tell me who's getting the first bucket of money from DOR, and more importantly, who's not. Is that something that we need to deal with legislatively to make that happen, or can you tell us a little bit more about the thought process there, please?
Commissioner Grove, I know we had extensive discussion on this issue, but please proceed.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair, Representative Juergens. It's a great question because it, from a pure perspective of running an efficient program, it makes good sense that you would just share data and move and go. But the state statutes that we operate under, that the legislature has designed, do not allow that kind of data sharing. And, you know, I would then write them, wasn't a part of them. We run an agency based on them. But if I was to intuit some of the reasons why is that sharing that information publicly of an individual business's revenue loss may not be palatable to some businesses. And I think certainly the legislature could move forward with a legislative fix if you felt making that data more transparent would be in the best interest of everyone involved. But I think the reason that that exists as a difference is simply that that kind of information starts to share in, you know, news about businesses that at a broad scale, some businesses might not want to be in public. But again, this is something that we just don't have the ability to do with the current laws that govern revenue or the Department of Employment Economic Development. We've tried to do as a fix is work very closely with counties on their programs to include self-attestation in the application process so that they can signal if they've gotten a grant or not. It's part of why we want to move quick on these revenue grants this week so the businesses will know and then they can tell counties the truth about whether or not they've gotten a grant or not. There's also something called the Form 165R, I think, that revenue has, and Commissioner Doty could speak more to this, that outlines some more data permission issues that an individual organization could fill out. But I hear your concern. It's one of those things where there's kind of perspectives on both sides of it, but as it relates to our ability to do anything on the data sharing right now, the Department of Revenue is bound back by that statute.
Thank you, Commissioner. I know we are running out of time. We will definitely have more questions in the coming days, and we will definitely try to address how we can help those businesses in the process. So members, as a reminder, we do not have a meeting next Monday in observance of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s holiday. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, January 20th. Hopefully, we'll see if we can get more questions for the UI and employment benefits, because I know most of you have asked that question. Having said that, I don't see any other agenda items for today, and it's the hour, the time that has come. So I just wanted to say thank you to the commissioner and his staff for their presentation. If you intend to connect with the department, please feel free. If you have any questions, I'm sure you will get those questions answered. Having said that, I would like to say the meeting is adjourned for today. Thank you so much, members.